From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford University. I am sitting next to my co-host, Dan Schwartz, dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Denise, do I know you?
Dan.
Do I know you as a person?
Dan.
Do I know you enough as a person that I could personalize instruction for you?
Do we know what personalized instruction even means?
This is all getting, it's going to be very deep.
Okay.
It's very deep.
Okay.
So I think we need to walk into this discussion making sort of distinctions along the way.
Okay.
So here's the thought experiment. Imagine that Stanford comes to you and says, we're going to give you a free year of school. You can come back for a year. And we'll make sure that you don't lose your other job, right? Somehow, wave the magic wand.
Don't quit my day job.
Yeah. So how would you like your experience at Stanford to be personalized?
How would I like it to be personalized? Well, I'll tell you what I would love to see a little bit different. There were requirements that I had to take that I really didn't want to take and I didn't enjoy and I kind of hated. And you can guess what subject I'm talking about because you know me.
It was the one where you had to eat dark leafy greens?
No, I like dark leafy greens.
Oh.
I did not like the fact that I had to take math, not just any math. I had to take calculus. And if I could redo, that would be one thing I would definitely redo.
So you'd like to personalize so the content is easier? Is that what you're saying?
No, I just had no interest in relevance. I didn't think it was I had to take statistics, which I also didn't love, but I saw the relevance of it. And so I'm not asking you to redo that. I'm just saying, okay, calculus,
So if you were your child says, Mom, I don't see the relevance of algebra, your response is, it is relevant. You just don't know, damn it.
No,
do it now.
No, my response is, I don't either. this reminds me of a story. This is true. The mom comes up to me and says, look, I have a kid who hates school. He hates it. He doesn't like to go. And I don't know what to do. And I said, well, what is he interested in? And she said, honestly, all he does all day long is skateboard. He has built a skateboard park in our backyard. And kids come from all over. And all he does is skateboard. And I looked at her and I said, do you know how much science is involved in skateboarding? Do you know how much math and science he had to do to build that skateboard park? What we've got to do is find a way to connect this love and passion that he clearly has and brains about it to school, to what he's doing in school.
So personalization for you is a motivational construct. It's something that makes if it's relevant to me, then it's interesting, and that's why I should personalize the content for children.
I think that's part of it. I mean, when we look at engagement, yes, that is definitely part of it. They have to see, especially if you think of the developmental stage of kids.
So basically, I could make the curriculum for third grade boys all be use volcanoes. Because everybody's fascinated by volcanoes.
If they love volcanoes, this is a whole thing out there called emergent curriculum, not to throw another word out, but it's where it comes from the kids. Reggio Emilia instruction in Italy in preschools, you use their interests and what they want to learn and what they want to study, and you design the curriculum from that.
Is there any chance this is overrated?
Oh, I think, sure. I mean, but I think we have an expert here.
Get in this. I don't know. I'm going to be a little bit of a gadfly here. But, there's some things people should do even if it's not interesting.
Take your medicine kind of theory there?
Yeah, take your medicine kind of theory.
Take your algebra kit?
Take your calculus, Denise.
Yeah. I have never used calculus since the day I took the class, just saying. Or if I did, I don't know that I'm doing it because I couldn't even tell you what it is.
Right, but there, if you had not taken it, there's some possible worlds that you could have never approached. Now, the fact that you didn't choose a world that involves calculus doesn't mean that you should have shut those paths off because you didn't know what you were going to become.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm pushing back on that one.
Okay. So let me continue my hostile attack. So why is personalization so hot? So it used to be like individualized learning, and I don't think that was exciting to people as personalized learning. So what do you think?
It's the me generation. It's all about me.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a little bit about that, right?
Yeah, so you can imagine the alternative is not personalized, it's socialized, that the whole reason you're learning is to contribute to others.
Right.
And so it's not about you.
And by the way, that is a whole big thing now too, right? Service learning is huge in the world of education.
So personalized service learning. It's like the perfect combo.
Okay, well, good.
We solved it. Of course, you have the teacher who's managing 150 different personal service learning activities. Okay, so Adam Carter, you now understand the tone of this conversation today. So Adam is the chief academic officer at Summit Public Schools, a very successful school program. He received his master's in teaching at the Stanford Graduate School of Education. So we are very, very proud of you, Adam. Adam's role, part of it is he helps make curricular decisions and he does research and development, and he's been key to Summit's embrace of personalized learning technology. So let me jump straight into it. And if this is an unfair question, let me know. Describe a completely personalized classroom. And help me, because when I taught, I taught English. Did you know this, Denise?
Okay, can I just say I taught English, and guess what? Adam taught English.
Three of us taught English.
Yes, very cool.
Of course, I just taught rules of grammar that kids had to follow and never use in their life.
Right. But, that makes me want to cry.
So give me the completely personalized classroom, and let's assume the class has more than, say, 12 kids.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me here.
And thank you for coming.
Thank you for putting up with Dan. Thank you.
I suspect we will find common ground.
Okay. Hallelujah.
So, and it's a very fair question. What does personalized learning look like? I will answer your question. I think what the power of personalized learning, as we are talking about it at Summit, is less about the classroom level and more about the school level. And it's around aligning your school support systems around students and treating students as individuals as opposed to allowing teachers to make the best decisions possible within the context of a single classroom. So reframing the idea of I'm a teacher of English to I'm a teacher of students and my specialty is English is an important part of our conception of personalized
learning. Help me understand what switch that flips in my head.
Yeah. The biggest switch that flips is that all of a sudden an English teacher in a traditional conception of an English teacher now has access to a student's progress in math, in history, through mentoring, has a mentoring relationship with a set of students who then you know the students' families, you know the students' peer groups. And by having this more full picture of a student and the student's context for learning, you're able to support the student in ways that traditionally as an English teacher, I might not have been able to.
Yeah.
English teachers are tricky. That's the tricky one, though. I mean, the reason I went into being an English teacher is because it gives you more of a 360 view of kids as part and parcel of your day job. So I think it's actually much more difficult as the calculus teacher to be able to have entry points to understanding a student's motivations, what the student has been exposed to and is interested in exploring further in your class. So I loved that about English. I loved that I could spend 3 weeks getting to know kids while also helping them understand how to structure a piece of writing or argument.
So let me give one piece of what you said. So I think at Stanford, a lot of the faculty are content-centered as opposed to student-centered. And so you ask them, what are your learning objectives? And they basically lay out what you're going to cover as opposed to what's going to happen with the student. And so that would be an example of the kind of shift or a small piece of the shift you're proposing?
Yeah. I think that's a really important part of the shift. And part of it is just putting your work in the context of student development. And so in some ways, there's a greater responsibility as an educator in a personalized learning system because what you're doing is you're taking responsibility for parts of the student's life and parts of the student's success that previously you didn't even know about. And so you didn't have to feel accountability for. On the other hand, you're working as part of a team. And that's the thing that happens sort of implicitly in a lot of schools, but it's not a structural part of your job in terms of having time to collaborate with a group of teachers who teaches your same course and having common information around how the projects are being delivered, how students are encountering those projects, what struggles there are being introduced, but also not just in English, but then in history as well, and trying to understand better if a kid is struggling mightily in my class, but is very successful in Denise's class, then you know, what can I learn from the context in which a student is so successful with Denise in order to apply that in my classroom? And often those are not trivial changes that I need to make, but often they are also not impossible to make.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking today with Adam Carter, who is the Chief Academic Officer at Summit Public Schools. And we're talking about really rearranging schools to make them more about personalizing for students.
So basically, teachers work as a team to discuss a student.
Yes.
And this is a key component. And this is, how do you set aside time for this? I'm an administrator now. I worry about these things. How do you do this?
Yeah, that's a great question. We find that the enabling environment for a personalized learning school is a building block of being able to effectively implement personalized learning. So, by the way, personalized learning is sort of a buzzword. And so when I say personalized learning, we actually have defined it and just called it, we've owned it and said, we're talking about Summit learning. I say that only because, not because one is better than the other, but one means something that I can define for you. And personalized learning writ large, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, you and me both, baby.
No. I don't have the standard definition.
We can all speculate. It's okay.
but as an administrator, I think, if you simply turn on its head the idea that we have a school schedule because we have to go through the block of English and history, and then we have these three electives, and we have to get those in, and then now all of a sudden we have a staffing issue. But remember, there's the advanced math class. All of a sudden, just by introducing the complexity of a school schedule, you have limited your ability to create a schedule around student needs. So a thing like mentoring becomes very difficult to prioritize when you know that you have a half-time Spanish teacher who can only come in the mornings 3 days a week and the afternoons too. And all of a sudden, the entire master schedule has now bent to a staffing consideration, which was not a wrong staffing consideration. But what we would ask is, how do you prioritize time where mentors, who are teachers, but teachers can spend one-to-one quality time with a student, setting goals, making plans to meet those goals, and reflecting on the last week's work so that those plans can be better informed, thus enabling students to be better learners. And so your job becomes, how do I support this student who is trying to attain his or her own goals, as opposed to how do I march them through the curriculum? That requires structural shifts to the tune of staffing, as I mentioned, master scheduling, which is a pretty significant consideration, and even building in time for teachers to collaborate, which isn't impossible. Many, many great schools are already doing this, where they have shared planning time for teachers of the same course or the same grade level. But this way is structured in on the front end, yeah. So it doesn't happen by chance.
But so there's a part where you're squeezing out inefficiencies to make time.
That's right.
For teachers to speak, and then there has something. There has to be some less is more theory that if we can get these teachers to talk about these kids and then spend the time to talk with the kids individually, we're not going to be able to cover, inch deep, mile wide.
That's right.
But we'll be able to do better on the things we choose to cover. Is that sort of how it plays out?
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Adam Carter, Chief Academic Officer at Summit Public Schools, talking about less is more and how that actually plays out in the Summit schools.
Yes. So that's a great question. That, in other words, the plate is full of an educator and of a student. Are we adding more on? And if so, then what comes off? So what comes off is a few things. One is that we really aren't in class time, the most valuable time we have, and we're talking about experts, professionals working with children to help support them in their goals. What we don't want to do in that time then is say, let me tell you about World War II. And for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be telling you about World War II. And I mean telling you about it in just a conveyance of content knowledge type of world. I don't mean to imply, it's so trite. It is also what I see when I walk around classrooms more than anything else, is a teacher in the front and rows of students sitting and listening. The truth is, I do still see that more than I see any other configuration, but I also don't mean to say that is truly representative of teaching in the world as it is now. What is, however, is that World War II lesson. I used to give an Antigone PowerPoint presentation that I thought was great, and kids were very engaged. I optimized the heck out of this Antigone PowerPoint presentation over 10 years of teaching English and doing Antigone with almost every class I ever taught, because I loved that play. And kids loved it. they knew the plot of Antigone. They knew the major themes of Antigone. And honestly, as I look back, I don't care that much if kids remember the plot of Antigone. I do care that they could apply the what they know of Antigone into some skill-based rich project, which luckily I was able to include too in the later years at least. So what we do put on the plate in healthy dosage is projects and project-based learning. And so these are all built off of a common rubric. It is a skills-based progression from grades 4 to grade 12, or really into early college, that we built with the Stanford Center for Assessment, Learning, and Equity, you know, just that way a few blocks. And so every project is built off of this one skills-based rubric and is assessed on that same rubric. That is in math, 12th grade, just as it is in, you know, in a humanities course in 4th grade, even in some self-contained classrooms. So that developmental progression means that teachers don't have to create their own rubrics, for instance. That is off the plate. It also means that you come into a what we call a base curriculum, in which there's a progression of projects that already exist that certainly you can tweak as you want to. But what you can't do is say, I'm not doing a project. I'm actually just going to lecture on content and then give a unit test at the end of next week.
So what's an example of a skill?
One skill. So there are these seven sort of large categories or mm-hmm. domains. In textual analysis, for instance, you might see structure listed as a skill. And so that is when you read a complex text, complex in the later grades, maybe less complex in the earlier grades. Right. Are you able to identify the structural elements? And ultimately, are you able to identify how structure creates meaning?
So if everybody has the same sort of rubric, right? And just to make sure people understand, a rubric is what you're going to use to assess what they've learned. If everybody's looking for textual analysis, then it kind of doesn't matter if you're doing Antigone or World War II. Is that, are we getting that right?
Yes, the content can be disaggregated from the skill.
And that frees up teachers to do what?
It frees up teachers to, I almost said personalize, but let's just say differentiate. So it allows teachers to, in the course of project-based learning, to be better at diagnosis of what individuals and groups need in that environment. And so social learning is de facto. If you were to walk into a Summit school right now, what you would see is kids working together a lot, which I think busts this conception of personalized learning as a interaction between a computer and a student. It's not that students aren't using computers as tools, but it isn't kids plugged into computers all day at all. In fact, most of the time is people interacting with each other. And some of that interaction does happen through, say, Google Docs as they're giving feedback or writing or processing. So if you were to go into a classroom, I think you'd see a lot of engagement in the textual analysis that you would see happening. You might see computers there, but you would also see like rich conversations. You'd also see stations often set up. And you would see some kids working individually, maybe one-on-one with a teacher or in pairs, and others in groups.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We will have more with Adam Carter and differentiating learning and making learning work in a way for kids at Summit Schools next on SiriusXM Insight 121.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking today with Adam Carter, Chief Academic Officer at Summit Public Schools, and we're talking about how schools and teachers can actually make schools more personalized, more about the whole child, less is more. And as you were talking, Adam, I had to think. So I had about 165 kids at one point as an English teacher. Dan, I know you had a lot of kids at one point, too, that you were responsible for. And you want to really reach out to every kid. You want to individualize. You want to make sure they're having this experience that you would want to give your own child. But you also have to think about standards. You also have to think about grading. And if we let kids do this in a way, this is really hard on the teacher. I mean, grading 165 individualized projects sounds almost impossible to me. What do you?
So one is to rearrange the schedule, so to make time for these things. Other things you can do. Just the task of keeping in mind 125 kids.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think. teaching is always going to be hard, and it's going to be emotionally hard. It's going to take a lot of time. As we were sharing, the three of us have been English teachers. The grading load is significant. And so there is the recomposition of something like a school structure, a staffing model. There is also efficiencies that can be got, even from the factory model, which has its own efficiencies, but efficiencies that can be had when people work together and know that what you are doing is helping support students this year and hopefully into the future, but that it's not all on you, that you're working as part of a collective in support of student learning. So part of it is teaching is always going to be hard. And so I think anyone who says otherwise is absolutely lying. I wouldn't trust a thing they said after that. What it can be is hard and very fulfilling at the same time. And I think what I've felt in places that I have not thrived as a teacher has been that I was working hard and I just wasn't, I was not at that time seeing student learning or students' process of learning or even students' engagement in learning move forward dramatically. And so the times when I've quit jobs have been times in which I've said the system is against me and not working for me. And I know there has to be a way to do better. I did not get into this to work this hard and not see results. So let me get concrete. I'd say there's two things that I would just highlight. One is that technology is often associated with personalized learning. And one way that we're trying to use technology to help support teachers in making strong decisions in the moment is by not giving more dashboards. And if you're listening as a teacher, I can only imagine that you're probably, if you use any technology products, what you're getting back is a bunch of red, yellow, green dashboards with often quite a lot of red on them. And you're left to figure out, what the heck do I do with all this? And how do I, you know, conference with 30 kids tomorrow in period one alone,
right?
Which is impossible. And so it's in my mind, good teaching is not a matter of just racing around a room and trying to have really good 5-minute conversations with each kid while the other 29 students do something that you're trying to keep them busy with, but instead to offer you actionable information about student learning on a much faster cycle, much quicker timeline than we usually give teachers. So some of the technology products that I'm very, very passionate about, and one part of Summit is the development of this thing called the Summit Learning Platform, which is accessible to people for free, is to create interventions and tips, essentially, for teachers that are going to help teachers make good decisions in the moment instead of giving a big dashboard. An example is something like, I'll just give the most recent example, actually. We know that we want parents to engage with us and be partners with us in their students' learning. We've always struggled to find time to really get parents involved day to day, minute to minute. And yet a few years ago, we were seeing these compelling studies by Todd Rogers, Susanna Loeb, around text messages as a really nice entry point to engaging parents. So we talked to Todd, and over time, we've now created a few triggers in our platform that allow the platform itself to recognize, you know, there is a project coming due in 3 days and the student's running a little behind. So we're going to trigger a text message to a parent to say, hey, by the way, your student could use a little bit of additional support getting ready. In 3 days, a project is due. We're trying to be very proactive and not punitive in these text messages.
Oh, my God. That was, for my kid, I would have gotten like 80 texts a day. just...
We have limits on it.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're speaking with Adam Carter, Chief Academic Officer at Summit Public Schools, about how Summit is really changing the way the classroom works with texting parents, changing the schedules. What are some other concrete changes that you've seen?
Concretely, we see a lot of times people, especially in our partnership program, so there's about 55,000 students around the country who are partnered through the Summit Learning Program. We hear teachers often coming in because they have real challenges in teaching and they want to work together as a team. And they're acknowledging that the way that they've been doing things hasn't been as effective as they want it to be for kids. And they know that there's power in working together. And often they've come to Summit and been like, oh, I like what I see here. I'd like to bring this to my own school. And so they come in for lots of reasons, from we like the curriculum, we want to do PBL, but we don't know how, to I like this competency-based sort of progression. I think it's really going to serve kids who are in my very heterogeneous classrooms, what we always hear on the back end is, I had no idea how much better I could get to know my students by approaching learning in this way. And it's like a revelation. I remember us hearing it and just being like, oh, thank goodness. Like, we're on the right track with this partnership program, because it wasn't about technology and it wasn't about project-based learning and it wasn't about anything but kids. And I now feel like I know my students better and far faster than I ever have before. And so that's what keeps us in it.
Big win. So, no, I think people forget the reason you get in teaching is because you really like the learners you work with. So we've been talking about how personalized learning might get you more engaged or get the teachers more involved in the aspects they like and more efficient. Are there sort of unique outcomes that you might look for? So you and I actually have talked about this, that if I as a student are involved with making decisions about personalization, does that sort of lead me to know myself better? And are these kinds of outcomes that we might look for in this kind of environment that are not academic, but there are other kinds of things?
If you were to boil it all down, it is, and we have talked about this, I would just say know thyself is a core tenet of what we're trying to accomplish here, that self-awareness.
Right. It's hard to personalize if you don't know who you are, if you're in charge of the personalization.
That's right. That's right. And it takes a significant amount of scaffolding and intervention along the way. And
I'm still trying to figure out who I am.
Good luck, Dan. I don't think Summit Schools has the answer for you on that one. But
if I had a team of teachers working on my behalf, do you think I'd figure out who I am?
Well, I think if you had, let's bring it up here. If you had a schedule that allowed you some time to interact with those adults, if you had interesting, relevant projects, if you had rubrics that weren't just based on getting an A or a B or a C, and then, by the way, we move on to the next unit, but these rubrics, as you're telling us, Adam, allow for that developmental growth, and if you don't hit it in your class, maybe the kid's going to get it in another class or next year. If you had that kind of everybody's on the side of doing it for the kids mentality, yeah. I think you would probably figure out, even you, Dan.
So let's say you had that educational experience, and I go back to the question I started with, which is, you're now going to get to personalize your year at Stanford. You think you'd be better at it because you had been through a system that had all these supports and.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a no-brainer in a sense, right? The traditional schedule of school doesn't work. Right. There's no time to meet with kids. There's no time to co-plan with teachers. The traditional step-by-step curriculum doesn't work. Project-based learning makes it more interesting and relevant. Right. This idea that we're going to know ourselves as learners because we're going to be learning the whole rest of our lives. And by the way, we're going to have a rubric that really helps us get there. Yeah. You got me sold. Thank you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're on the campus of Stanford University and on SiriusXM Insight 121.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.